Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Basketball is back, and Bet Online remains your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at Bet Online. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, Bet Online features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all of your favorite sports and events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to betonline.ag to receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your rewards. Bet Online, where the game starts.
Bag that I got is overpriced and you can't get this now. You in your bag now, and you ain't never been a man, you gotta brag now. And you ain't never been the type to finish last now. You made it to the NBA from a class clown.
It's crazy how this shit changed.
Yeah, yeah, they won't love you if you stay the same.
Yeah, yeah, they won't love you if you feel your pain.
You got that platform, better speak your truth. Penetration through these words, fuck they bulletproof.
Time to give me,
cause I'm in my bag, oh. And I won't finish last, no, no, cause I'm in my bag.
Alrighty, folks, we are back with another episode of the What's In Your Bag podcast with Andrew Robinson. And today, we have a special guest, man. This guy, me and this guy go way, way back to the prep school days, man, in the knapsack. But now he's doing his thing on the biggest stage in the NBA with the LA Clippers. I'm happy and pleased to be joined by none other than Terrence Mann. So, Terrence, thank you for joining us, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
No doubt, no doubt, man. And shoot, man, like I said, it's been a while, man, since we've been back in the knapsack days, man. But I kind of want to get right into it. Obviously, you know, I first met you back in 2015 when you were at Tilton. But obviously, you know, you were born in New York, you know, raised in Mass. Kind of talk to me a little bit just about your upbringing, like, you know, how you kind of started hooping, you know, what brought you to Mass, and then, you know, obviously how that kind of molded you into the player that you are today.
Yeah, so I was born in Brooklyn, New York. My mom was grad assistant coach at LIU Brooklyn at the time. So I kind of always been around basketball, man. After school, I went to school down the street. My dad would pick me up sometimes, take her to her practices, sometimes just go home, whatever, whatnot. But I was always around basketball. Played a lot of soccer too. My family's Caribbean, so in the fall time it was just straight soccer. Winter time it was straight basketball. So I did that till I was 11, and then my mom got the head coach job at Northeastern University in Boston. So we left New York, went up north to Boston. That's where I moved. That's where I started, you know, really growing up, playing basketball. My friends out there, we played basketball outside a lot. And then we started hearing about the prep school scene. So I went to prep school at age 14. I started living up there at boarding school and just, you know, focused on hoop.
Yeah. Now, speaking of just the whole prep school scene, man, when me and you were there, man, the prep school scene was crazy. I mean, I only went to Putnam for 1 year. You were obviously at Tune for a little bit longer, but I mean, Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Adams, my teammate, Hamidou Diallo. I mean, the list goes on and on. Wenyen Gabriel was at Wilbur Munson when we were there. Knapsack is crazy, you know, when it comes to just NBA guys, talent coming out of high school, man. But talk about some of the your favorite memories, your favorite moments from playing at Tilton, and then how you think that kind of prepared you for, you know, what came next in your career.
Yeah, I had a lot of, you know, cool moments, and then played a lot against a lot of cool players too. You know, guys who made it all the way to the NBA, guys who, you know, any given night, you're playing at least three Division I players in that league. So, yeah, I mean, I remember one game versus Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Adams, and them at Brewster. You know, they had a stacked team. They were like 11, 12 Division I players deep, and we took them, I think, to overtime or something at our house. But that's like a rivalry because they live up the street. Their school's right up the street. It's like 20 minutes from us. So those games are crazy. Even when we played y'all, man, like, you know, first half we were blowing y'all out. Y'all figure it out. Y'all come all the way back. You know, the game goes right down to the wire. So games like that, man, just cool games like that. And then, you know, eventually you find out, you know, who ends up playing D1. And you're like, damn, like, you really played against a lot of players in that league.
Man, it's crazy. And I think it's even crazier for me because I was from Maryland. You know what I'm saying? So for me, coming to Connecticut, like,
You know, for those who guys are watching this and don't know, I mean, in the DMV, you got the Mathers, the Gonzagas, the Paul Six. I mean, it's the Catholic League down there is a crazy league. So I was always like, you know, the WCC is like, you know, bar none, the best league in the country, ain't nowhere near it. And I came to NIPSAC and I was like, wow, I mean, it's definitely like, I think you can compare. Obviously, it's a little different because guys are older in these leagues, but the bump was definitely crazy, man. But I kind of wanted to ask you, kind of transition a little bit. Obviously, you know, you leave Tilton, you end up committing to Florida State. And, you know, looking back on it, for me at least, from the outside looking in, I feel like in the last maybe 5 years or so, 5-10 years, a bunch of wins have come out of Florida State. Yourself, Dwayne Bacon, Malik Beasley, Jonathan Isaac, Scotty Barnes just last year. Plenty of wings, you know, have kind of made the NBA from there. But I feel like when you were coming there, that wasn't really a thing yet. And you can tell me if I'm wrong. But so for you, like, what was the reasoning for why you chose Florida State at that time? Because I feel like now it's an easy pitch to kind of go there as a guy like yourself and play and make it to the league. But for you, what's that got about Florida State that made you want to go there, you know, for the next 4 years?
For me, it was the vision. Like, it was exactly that, to start something new. You know, I could have went to Indiana. I could have went to Georgetown. I could have, you know, went to all these schools where, you know, it's normal to for a 5-star or a 4-star, whatever I was, to go to a school like that and make it to the NBA. But I wanted to try my own path. And I had ended up talking to two other players who wanted to do the same thing, Dwayne Bacon and Malik Beasley. So we were in the same class. And we were all roughly the same position, but we were like, you know what, let's just go there and try and do something and, like, change the narrative, because it was a football school. They had just won the national championship with Jameis Winston. You know, they had Jalen Ramsey, Derwin James, all these football players already going there. And we were like, you know what, let's go there too and make it a basketball school. And that's exactly what I did, man. I went in there, did 4 years. I was a 3-year captain there. And just made it a basketball school. And from me, Dwayne Bacon and Malik Beasley, that turned into Jonathan Isaac, that turned into Devin Vassell, who's on the Spurs, that turned into Pat Williams, who's on the Bulls, that turned into Scotty Barnes, you know what I'm saying? That turned into, you know, Fiondu Cavangeli, who got drafted with me to the Clippers. It just got the ball rolling. And there's a bunch of players playing overseas. I mean, Xavier Tan-Mays right now is in Australia. He's killing it. Brian Angola, like a bunch of high-level overseas players also. So, yeah, man, we just had a vision early. We were young, but we were mature, and we changed that whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And just kind of a follow-up on that, you mentioned all the guys that you obviously have made to the league and from Florida State, but you guys also went to an Elite Eight and a Sweet 16 while you were there. You mentioned you guys were coming off of the football team winning a national championship. So, like, what was that like around that time, man, when y'all was getting it lit? But historically, it's a football school, so it was like, was y'all still feeling love around campus? Like, what was the vibes around the town, you feel like?
So my first 2 years, we were still like the little brothers on campus. You like, you still feel like, you know, our games were getting lit, our games were selling out, but everybody was waiting for football season. And then my junior year, senior year, when we made the Elite Eight and stuff, it was the opposite. Like, you could feel, you know, everywhere I went on campus, I, you know, somebody wanted a picture, all, you know what I'm saying? It was just crazy. I stopped going to class. Like, I was like, man, like, class is a lot for me, because people want to talk, you know what I'm saying? People want to, you know what I mean? It started getting crazy on campus everywhere I go. And shoot, if there were NIL deals back then, I would have been a millionaire for sure. Like, my last year of school. But yeah, man. So it shifted. It took about 2 years, two good years to shift that energy. But yeah, early on, it was tough.
Yeah, we had Marquise Reed on the podcast last week, and he was talking about the same thing, kind of dealing with that at Clemson, obviously, right, in football school. And they actually went to the Sweet 16 as well while he was there. And right. So I find it interesting, man, what that process is like, man. But I you know what, you know, me, us mid-major folks, you know, I went to Quinnipiac and then Copper State. So I didn't have that big time campus life, man. So, like, I've actually never asked anybody this before, because I feel like when you go to a school like Duke and Kentucky or maybe UNC, like, stuff like that is kind of expected. But for you, like, being at Florida State when that was going on, like, what is that actually like for you trying to be a student and not being able to kind of, I guess, have that peace of mind or, like, do things? Like, how chaotic does it really get, you know, around campus?
It definitely got chaotic. And our campus is right in the middle of HBCU, FAMU, that's on the other side of the tracks, and TCC, where most of the kids in Florida, it's a community college, go to also, and our school's right in the middle. So you have, I think we had like 50,000 kids at our school, and then each of the other schools had like 20-plus thousand,
right,
all in like a 3-mile radius. So it's like, it's a lot going on, like every day. So it's almost like, that's why I'm so used to LA, because it was almost like the same type of energy,
right,
like a lot going on every day. There's something, you know, you got parties, you got girls from all sorts of schools, all sorts of backgrounds, you got a whole bunch of distractions. But I think our coaches did a great job of keeping our heads on straight and keeping the main thing. And like, you know, this is only temporary. Like, you're only going to be here for 4 years. You want to set your life up down the line. And I think we bought into that.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's a perfect segue into my next question, man. When me and Ace first got into the journalism thing, we had a segment called Coach's Corner. And we had the opportunity to interview Leonard Hamilton during that series. And that was probably one of the best interviews that we ever had, as far as just the things that he was saying, the gems that he dropped, especially just talking to another African-American coach, you know, about just what that path was like and things like that. What can you say about what that experience was like playing for Coach Hamilton at Florida State, and just some of the lessons that he was able to teach you, you know, over your 4 years? Because I feel like he doesn't get enough credit, you know, for being like the legendary coach that he is in the college basketball game.
And he won't due to him being, you know, African-American coach. He won't get that credit. He won't, you know, they won't, they might do something for him, but it's not going to be to exactly what he deserves compared to all the other coaches that get that. Right. But, man, like, life lessons is, it was an everyday thing. Like, every day he has you thinking, you know, is my head on straight? Like, that's the main message that he gives. Like, every single day you walk out of that gym, you're thinking like, am I doing the right thing? Is my head on straight? Am I preparing myself and my family to be, you know, great and set down the line? And that's all he wanted, man. He didn't care about, I mean, he didn't care about wins, losses. He just wanted everybody to just, you know, change their family's life. He was big on that. And he was big on being a man, and he was big on respect. And like, you know, their famous quote that sticks with our team is, respect is the ultimate currency. Like, not money, not anything. I even have that tatted on me now. Yeah, like, respect is the ultimate currency, man. You have respect, you can, it's worth more than anything. And I think that was, you know, one of the biggest takeaways I got from going to school down there.
Yeah, that's love, man. So putting the cap kind of on the college experience, obviously I feel like by this point everybody's heard, you know, the story about you going to the G League camp and then you leaving and your phone about to die or anything like that. If you haven't heard that, make sure you look it up. We're not going to have bro, you know, recite that whole thing. But just talk about what your draft prospect was like, man. Because obviously, you know, you ended up going in the second round. But I feel like from what I've heard, like when you kind of are in that like late first round, second round range, you're working out for a bunch of teams. You don't really know where you're going. So what was that draft process like? Did you have any idea of like what team like that the Clippers might be interested in you, or was it kind of like, yo, man, I can go anywhere. I'm just, you know what I'm saying?
My draft process was interesting, man. Nobody wants a 4-year college player. Like, it's just nobody wants that. And, you know, though it comes with maturity and knowledge of the game, and, you know, I feel like the 4 years college players that came before me showed a great deal of, you know, they're going to be good off the court. You know, they set good examples. So I don't understand why, but, yeah, man, it was a process. I had to work out for, I think, 14 teams, you know, multiple cities in multiple days, commercial flights, a lot of interviews. The draft process was probably the most stressful process I ever had of basketball in my life. In terms of, like, especially in my position where you're hearing you can go late first round to you're hearing you can go undrafted, and it's like one day will change all of that quick, you know what I'm saying? A couple hours of the draft night and then your life's just changed forever. So that was just a scary thing thinking of going into the whole process, just not knowing where I'm gonna go. But I knew that the Clippers had told me, you know, they were real interested. If I would have fell to that pick, I would probably get picked up by them. But you know, there were also a bunch of other teams telling you the same thing. So you never really know.
Right. So obviously you end up going to the Clippers, and I mean, you walk into a situation where, you know, you get a chance to learn from Kawhi and Paul George, and obviously those guys are still your teammates today. But thinking back when you were a rookie, obviously as a wing, you know, you're playing the same position as those guys. What was that like walking into a situation where, number one, you know, you get to learn from two, you know, all NBA level players. But number two, you know, I think just what was that like? Well, like the first time you was like, damn, like, all right, these are going to be my teammates. You know what I'm saying? Like, what was that mindset like?
I mean, my first day with the team was crazy, man. Like, I was in shock. Like, it was not only Kawhi and PG, man. It was Lou Williams. It was Patrick Beverley. You know, it was Montrezl Harrell. It was Patrick Patterson. You know, it was Mo Harkless, like guys I just grew up watching, you know, all the time in general. So it wasn't just them two. It was like the whole team. I was like, dang, this is crazy. Like, it was a lot to take in. So I didn't just learn from Kawhi and PG. It was all of them collectively, like, you know, how to move around off the court, you know, how to play the game on the court, how to, you know, how to stick in the league for as long as you can. Like, they would always drop little gems and stuff like that. So that whole process, that rookie year was interesting, man. It was a lot of fun, though.
Now, obviously, I'm a pro basketball player myself. I know there are a bunch of pros that watch this. What are, I guess, if you could say one tip or one, you know, piece of knowledge that they dropped on you as far as, you know, how to remain in the league, or, you know, how to be a better pro, like, that you could share, you know, what would it be?
I think the biggest thing was always be professional. Like your feelings don't matter in this game almost. Like, you know, how you feel doesn't really matter. You got to be professional. You got to, you know, understand the process, understand the game and play it. And you can't just, you know, be all about me. You know, sometimes it's the team first, and that's just what it is. Sometimes it's a business decision, and that's what it is. Just remain professional, and they'll respect you for that. And that goes back to, you know, respect is the ultimate currency. As long as you have respect in this league, especially in that locker room, then, you know, your name's going to go a long way.
Yep. Now, I feel like one of your, you know, career highlights, man, was that series against the Jazz, man, where you ended up dropping 39 points. And I feel like you were the culprit to end the Rudy Gobert era in Utah, because after y'all shot them Bulls out the gym, they realized that he can't guard the three-point line, and they shipped him out to Minnesota. But for you, like, as a player, like, I feel like, just for me watching that game as a fan, I felt like, I don't know, it was crazy. I think you could tell that, like, you was in a crazy zone, you know what I'm saying? But just walk me through that game, man. Like, when that was going down, what was going through your mind? Cause obviously, you know, for you, like, it's not like you were, you know, one of the main guys. Like, for a role player to come out and drop 39, like, that doesn't happen too often, you know. So, like, what was the mindset during the game, like, when you kept hitting shot after shot? Like, what was going through your head?
Yeah, so I just, like, it started the game before that. They started playing Rudy on me in the second half of that game, and I felt disrespected. I'm like, yo, you have a center guard in me, like, standing in the paint while I'm shooting threes, like that's very disrespectful. And I was like, I'm never letting this happen again. You know what I mean? That was my mindset. Like, I'm sending a message not to just the Jazz, but to the NBA. Like, come on now. Like, I'm a professional basketball player. Just because I don't shoot 10 threes a game don't mean I can't shoot the threes. You know what I'm saying? So I felt disrespected. So I was like, you know, when we play them next game, I'm shooting that thing every time I touch it. Like, anytime I touch it on that three-point line, I'm shooting it, because that's just crazy. Like, I can make threes. I work on my game, and I want to show, you know. And my biggest knock going into the NBA was that I couldn't shoot. Right. And I was like, that's just not my game. Like, I don't just go into the game chucking threes, but I can shoot, you know what I'm saying? So I just felt disrespected. So it was just a message, like, to the world almost, like, you know, this is what y'all thought I couldn't do. So that's why I was so locked in and in the zone, because I was so mad, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was very disrespectful to me.
Now, at some point, did they start calling plays for you, or was it all just kind of in the flow of the offense that was coming to you?
No, it wasn't plays for me, but we knew what flow would get the ball to me. You know, we knew what actions would get the ball around the horn and have him in the paint where I would be open.
Right. I got you. Now, obviously, you know, fast forward from there, that kind of propels you into the next season. You end up signing a new contract extension with the Clippers. Talk about, just after you sign your extension, man, like, you're coming from being a second-round pick. Like, G League draft, like getting the last minute invite to the combine. What did it mean for you to be able to sign that extension and finally be able to kind of, you know, not take a deep breath, but just be like, all right, like, you know, I finally got some security a little bit here, you know?
Nah, the security aspect of it was dope to be able to sign that and know, you know, like, A, I'm going to have a couple more years in my career in this NBA thing, and B, I'm going to have a lot more money, too, that comes with it just from playing this game that I love. So that was a pretty cool feeling. But it was also, again, you know, a disrespect thing how I felt. You know, I felt like I should have been first round, obviously. I felt like, you know, I just wanted the respect that I deserved. So it felt good to get that, you know, in that sense.
Right. Now, kind of fast forward into this season, right? We kind of walked it through all the way up to present day. You scored 39 in the playoffs. You know, you signed an extension. Kawhi gets hurt. Obviously, last year he's out. You know, so you have a larger role on the team. Now this year, you guys picked up John Wall. You know, you guys added a bunch of new pieces, and everybody, Kawhi's back in the lineup, obviously, and everybody's like, all right, bet, like, we're a title contender. You know, Clippers should be, you know, one of the favorites to win it all. And your role shifts, right? Now you have to kind of fit into a new role. How do you kind of adjust from everything that was going on last season and ending that season before that, you know, having a high in the playoffs where it's like, all right, now I might be in a mix. And now you kind of got to transition into, all right, like, what do I got to do for us to just fit in and then win?
That's a whole nother adjustment. You know, last year I was playing like almost 30 minutes a game.
Right.
And, you know, the year before that I was, you know, in the rotation almost every night. So now it's, you know, I'm plugging in. You know, if we need a backup point for the night, I'm backup point. If we need a backup center for the night, I'm backup center. You know, the last two games I started at the two. Before that I was coming off the bench as the three. You know, now I think I'm playing a little four. So it's a process that I'm gonna have to adjust to, but it's fun, man. It's fun being able to play every position. I guard every, like, I guard 1 through 4, sometimes 5, depending on who the 5 man is. But, like, it's dope being able to guard all these different players, pick up different tendencies, learn from their games, you know, learn from other players' games that I'm guarding. You know, so it's I'm having a lot of fun with it right now. I'm not going to lie.
That's dope. Talk to me about what type of coach Ty Lue is, you know, because I feel like a lot of fans watch him from afar and they see his energy on the sidelines, and I feel like there's also the casual basketball fan who doesn't really know the game that will say, oh, you know, he won a championship because he coached LeBron, things like that. When in reality, he's one of the best coaches in the league. You know what I'm saying? And I think he proved that last season and the year before that with what he was able to do with you guys. So just talk about what kind of coach he is, what it's been like playing for him over the last couple of years.
Yeah, Ty's, you know, he's a great coach. He's a great coach, a great guy. He's always keeping it real with us players. You know, he never has us guessing. You know, he's like, this is what I want to do. He's very straightforward, and this is what I'm doing. He's big on adjustments. So if he sees something, he's going to act on it quick. And I think that's what makes him so great, just his ability to, you know, be two steps ahead at all times.
Yeah, yeah. So this is my last question about the Clippers, man. I want to get your take on this. The Clippers will be 2023 NBA champions if we just all
buy into our roles, and I, you know, I slowly see us starting to do it, and it's early, so you know it can get real scary.
Say no more. I'm gonna be definitely tuned in, man. Obviously, like I said, I got my dog Ace over there, so I'm a right. Clippers fan by obligation. You know what I'm saying? But we're gonna switch it over a little bit, man, because you know, obviously one of the main things about this What's in Your Bag podcast that I really pride myself on is talking about things off the court and outside of the game. And one thing that I've noticed about you is that, you know, you're a very fashionable guy, man. And you put a lot of, I guess, effort and care into your outfits and things like that. So we got a segment called Match and Mismatch. And we're going to go through just a couple questions. Match is more likely, I guess, just kind of a fashion trend that I guess that's in right now. Maybe something that you got your eye on that you like. And mismatch is going to be what's a fashion trend that you want to see go, something that you think is not really it right now. But so we'll start with the first question first. What do you think is a fashion trend right now that you're liking a lot, that you think that, you know, maybe is on the rise?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think the fashion trend that I feel like is on the rise right now, I think, like, more people are transitioning to more business casual type look. Like, I like that. Like, I feel like a lot of guys are getting away from the hardcore streetwear to more business casual. Like, you know, it's obviously gonna go back. All trends, you know, go back. But I like right now where it's at, where a lot of guys are, you know, dressing classy and, you know, making money off that.
Facts. Facts. All right, and then second half of that question is, man, what's the trend that you want to see go? That's just like, yeah, that ain't it.
I'm gonna go with not a clothes thing, but I'm starting to see the people doing the paint, the white paint, the white paint. I believe, is that Baltimore or is that Philly?
It ain't Baltimore. It must be Philly. Cause I ain't seen that around. The I ain't from Baltimore, but I'm.
Nah, I know. I think it's Philly though. But I see that starting to creep into to a few videos that I've been scrolling past, and I'm not jacking that. Nah.
Say no more. Say no more. Yeah. So obviously, man, like for you, I feel like we talked about this kind of off air a little bit, but obviously living in LA, man, and being there for the last couple of years, what do you think type of impact living in LA, being on the scene, has had on your fashion sense of style? You know, I feel like you see a bunch of dudes, like they go out to LA and they start like just working with a bunch of different brands and jumping into a bunch of different lanes. So for you, do you feel like being in LA has kind of influenced your style at all?
I think it definitely has, you know, opened my eyes to, I think LA is more of a place where you can dress how you want. Like you can be you and nobody's going to, you know, nobody's going to outwardly judge you. And right. I feel like on the East Coast, you kind of got to dress how everybody else around you dress, or else you ain't, you know, you ain't cool, you ain't hip, you know what I mean? But in LA, like, you have a friend group that look, all five of them look way different. And I think that's pretty cool because they're dressing how they feel comfortable with. And on the East Coast, you know, everybody dresses, now I wouldn't say the same, but you have a dress code with your friend group on the East Coast, you know what I mean?
All right, they're going to let you know. So, they'll let you know.
Exactly. Like, in LA, you can wear some crazy shit and they'll just be like, oh, that's him, you know what I mean?
I think a perfect example of that is what happened to Kyle Kuzma, bro, because he was in LA wearing all type of crazy stuff. As soon as he came to DC and threw the pink sweater on, the long sleeve.
Yeah, they were not having it.
On his head.
That's all I'm saying.
But if he would have been Lakers, he'd have been smooth. He would have been smooth. Mm-hmm. One other thing I noticed, I listened to your video that you did on Lee Fitz, where you were doing like a little thrift session, and one thing that you said was that you like to highlight like smaller brands and like kind of get them a platform. So for you, like, what are some of those brands that you're rocking right now that you really like that you think people should know about?
I think Hounds is a big one. You know, they're really good. Hounds, that's one of my favorite brands. They drop, you know, sweaters, they drop jeans, they drop the whole nine. Like, it's really good. There's a lot of little brands that, you know, I can't even think of the name. That, you know, Home Firm, they're really good. You know, Frame is a pretty, you know, big, they're on their way. I wear a lot of their stuff. But I just like, you know, brands that's not, you know, the Gucci, the Louis V. Like, I don't need to be wearing that stuff. Like, you know, people know I got money. I don't need to go show that I got money. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't need to be walking around Gucci head to toe. Like, maybe for fun, like, but not that's not in my closet, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I just like, I like people having a brand and being able to send it to somebody that they know that'll wear, and people will see it and the excitement they get. Like, yo, you know, send me that picture that you wore my stuff. Like, I like that feeling to make somebody feel that way. You know what I mean? I like that, you know, putting people on. That's just like my favorite thing to do.
Right.
Yo, I never had nobody put me on, you know what I mean? I've been, you know what I mean? So I like being able to put people on.
Facts. Yo, it's crazy you say that about the Gucci head to toe. Cause when we had a homie on, bro, he was like, he calls it the mannequin challenge. He said the same thing. You know, he called people the mannequin challenge. He'd be wearing the Gucci head to toe. The Dior.
Yeah, you go into Gucci and look at a mannequin and be like, that's what I want.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Hey, listen, man. That's the second. Hey, listen, if y'all listen to this, man, I got to leave that in the past, man. You know what I'm saying? That's not him.
Yeah.
That's a fact, though. So my next question is this, man. Like, I think I was wanted to ask this because I feel like I know. So you have a stylist, and I know I did some research. Her name is Mary. Mary Francis. So I guess it's a two-part question. Number one, like, What does a stylist do for you? Like, as far as like, cause I was wondering, all right, do are they picking the whole fit and sending it to you? Like, are they just being like, oh, you should wear this with that? Like, how does that work as far as the collab with you and a stylist? That's the first part of the question.
Yeah, so it's like a collaboration. Like, you know, she's like, I like this, and I'm like, I like this, and then she'll send me something. You like these two together? I'll be like, nah, I'd rather wear it with this. You know what I'm saying? Like, we just go back and forth on what I want to wear. And then we're in year four now, so she really knows what I like. So now she's just like, anything she puts together, she knows that I'm gonna like it. Just, you know, just from working together so long. But, you know, she just shops for me, goes out and picks stuff that she thinks I like. She connects with all these brands. You know, they send stuff over for free. Some brands pay me to wear stuff. Like, it's a whole different marketing strategy outside of, you know, the court.
That's tough. That's tough. And then, so my second question, I feel like you have people, I feel like it's like a two-sided coin. You have some people who like embrace having style. I was listening to Elite Fitz interview with D Wade and Melo, and they were both talking about they had their stylist on the interview, and they were both talking about the relationship they had with them over the course of their career. But then you got other people who post fits and they'd be like, yeah, like no stylist. Like, you know, I do it a little my own out here. You feel me? So, like,
Yeah, I mean,
what's your take on it? Like on that whole, on the whole thing? Like, what do you, what side of the coin do you fall on? Obviously, since you got
I'm a businessman. I'm a businessman. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not gonna take pride in making, you know, wearing people's stuff and making no money for it and not putting them on and not helping them out. You know what I mean? I'm gonna try and put my circle on. I'm gonna try and put my stylist on. Like, if I could have a stylist and put her on, I'm gonna try and do that. I'm trying to put the brands on, you know what I'm saying? And I'm gonna make money while I do. I'm gonna invest in brands. I'm gonna take equity in brands. I'm gonna, you know what I'm saying? So that's how I'm thinking about it. I'm not with the pride stuff. You know what I mean? I'm a businessman. So yeah, that's my take on it.
Period, period. I fuck with it. So then I guess so for you, since you have dollars, do you still shop like for stuff on your own, or is it kind of like she just tell her, oh yeah, can you go grab this for me? Like, how does that work? Do you still like, or does she kind of just have all
I
your
don't. Yeah, I don't like the process of shopping. Like, I don't like walking around and looking at things 100 times and be like, should I buy it? Should I buy it? I'd rather just like see something and be like, that's what I want, and then send it to her, and then she'll get it.
Okay.
But the whole like going to the store, I hate that stuff. I hate that process.
Yeah, I bet it's kind of hectic. I guess being in the league now, playing for the Clippers, you probably can't do too much of that anyways.
Yeah, I think, you know what I think it is, though. I'm scarred from, you know, my mom. You know, growing up being, you know, single, just going to the stores with her, going to the malls with her, being there for like 4 or 5 hours, just walking around all day. You know, I'm
Thanks.
scarred. Going to Marshall's, like walking around all day in Marshall's. Nah, I'm not doing that anymore.
Nah, yeah. Nah, I feel you, man. Them days is wild. You can I get something? No, don't touch nothing.
Yeah, no, you just get no'd all day. That's probably why I got PTSD.
Nah, so all right. So I guess my next question would be, obviously now, it's coming into the wintertime now, but I don't really know how much of winter y'all get in LA. I don't know if it really gets cold out there or not. You know, what you got in your wardrobe for the cold season coming up, man? Anything you got your eye on, what you like, you know what I'm saying? What you got
No,
coming up?
I got a few. Yeah, I got a few puffer jackets about to come out. Got a few leather jackets I'm about to wear. Yeah, I'm big on jackets. Like, if you look at my style, I always got like a sweatshirt or like something over, you know. I'm never just with a t-shirt on. So I'm big on layers. So I'm just gonna layer up this winter.
Yep. So when it comes to just like just I guess you talk about it, you know, say you're a business man, you know what I'm saying? And when you talk about your brand, right? Like, you have any vision down the line of like starting your own clothing brand or getting into the fashion from like a another level, like, you know, down the line, like kind of what do you see? 'Cause I feel like, you know, for somebody like yourself who does actually like, and one, you invest in it, you take pride in it, you actually pay attention to it. It's not just like you're throwing stuff on, you know, like you so you have an actual passion for it. So like, do you have any plans to kind of, you know, expound upon that kind of down the line anyway?
Yeah, I do. I do definitely. And right now, me and my team are working on taking the right avenue. Like, I want my first step in it to be the right thing to do. So I don't know if it's to start a clothing brand. I don't know if it's to collaborate with clothing brands. I don't know exactly what I want to do yet, but definitely something.
Yeah. Now, how do you navigate like those brand partnerships? Because you mentioned your stylist is bringing you deals as far as like, all right, you know, this brand wants to pay me to wear this and that. Like, so by the end of the day, it's up to your discretion to be like, all right, like, I'm not really rocking with that fit or those clothes. Like, how do you kind of determine, like, all right, what you actually going to put on your body and promote as far as, like, all right, well, this brand is going to pay me some money and I'm going to wear it?
I mean, it's not an easy process. You know, it's a lot of back and forth, a lot of figuring out what I'm going to do. But, you know, we got a good system with it. And yeah, you know, I try not to exploit brands. I try not to just go into things for the money of it either. You know what I mean? Like, it gotta make sense with what my style is and what we like to wear.
Right. Copy, man. So to cap it off, man, you gotta give us your top five swaggiest players in the league based on your fashion sense. It don't gotta be like the consensus, like who are your top five favorite dudes that you like. Right.
That's a good question. I like, you know, Jordan Clarkson. I like his style. I like Devin Booker. You know, he goes with the Bono chromatic type style. I like Shea. The style is unique. What's that, three?
Yep.
Who else is good? I like John Wall's been doing really well recently. He's been wearing a lot of Gallery Department, but he's been mixing it with other stuff, so I like that. And then the fifth one, that's tough. There's a lot, bro. There's a lot. I'm trying to think of an old head who'd be dressing nice. I got David Duke from the Nets.
Okay. Keeping it in the New England family.
Yeah.
Okay. I was talking to one of my boys. His name is Stan Kidd. He had a stint with the Jazz 2 years ago, but he's overseas now. And he brought up Jeff Green as one of the old heads that really be like that really be dressing. And I feel like his name got brought up on that podcast I was talking about with D Wade and Melo. But I feel like he's one of the older dudes that apparently, you know, I think he got some respect in the fashion game.
Nah, for sure, Jeff Green, 100%.
That's a bet, man. Shoot, man, I ain't gonna keep you for too long, man. I always end the podcast off like this, man. I took this segment from All the Smoke because I think it's a genius idea. Who's one person that you would like us to have on the podcast? But whoever you say, you gotta help get them on. It could be a player, a stylist, a photographer. It could be anybody that you think is dope doing great work. You know what I'm saying? It don't gotta be a hooper. It could be somebody who you wanna, you know, who think it deserves some shine, whatever it may be. But who would you want to see on this platform?
I think an artist, you know, probably try music artists, you know, from the area. From my area is Lil Rich. He's from Lowell, so he's from where I'm from. You know, I think artists, they go through a lot of different things and similar to athletes. So I think just, you know, merging those lanes would be pretty cool.
Okay, I bet. So after the show, man, we're gonna chop it up. See if we can get Lil Rich to tap in with us, man. That's gonna be the best, man. But nah, man, definitely want to say thank you, man, for taking the time out and chopping up with us, man. I know you got a busy season, and you guys obviously got, you know, big goals for this year, man. So I know, you know, it's a lot of things you could be doing today, man. So I definitely want to say thank you for stopping by the What's in Your Bag podcast, man, and. Like I said, I know my brother's gonna be taking good care of y'all boys out there, man. If he
does for sure.
Doing his job, man, let me know. You know what I'm saying? I'll get on his ass for y'all, man. But nah, man, shout out to you, man. Like I said, it's been a pleasure to just watch your career grow, bro, from tilting, obviously through Florida State, and to see where you are now, man. I know that you know, from the outside looking in, for me, it's definitely been a pleasure to see you work, and a dude that was underrated and an underdog story, man. You always love to see it. So wishing y'all nothing but success this year. And I'm going to be rooting for y'all, like I said. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me again.
No doubt, man. All right, guys. This has been another episode of the What's in Your Bag podcast presented by Bet Online. Make sure you guys are liking this podcast, giving us a 5-star rating, subscribing to this podcast if you're listening to it on YouTube. It goes a long way. It's going to be Pull Up Tay on the outro. That was him on the intro, guys. And we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Peace. This has been another episode of the What's in Your Bag podcast, presented by Bet Online.
Gotta brag now, and you ain't never been the type to finish last now.
You made it to the NBA from a class clown.
It's crazy how this shit changed.
You in your bag now.
Thank you for listening to Believe.
You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.